Thank you. I'd like to call the assembly meeting of December 21 to order and ask that you stand and join us in the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, will you call the roll, please?
Ms. Drain?
Here.
Mr. Jones?
Here.
Ms. Gladyszewski?
Here.
Mr. Keough?
Here.
Mr. Nankervis?
Here.
Ms. Troll?
Here.
Ms. White?
Here.
Mayor Becker?
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. We're very honored tonight that we get to award four different awards that we received at the Alaska Municipal League conference that we went to. As you will be able to tell soon, Juneau was recognized for some very good work that we have done. And I've asked some of the assembly members to help give these awards to the various people that are being awarded. And so I'll start with Ms. Crane.
The first award this evening is a public safety award that has gone to the Juneau Police Department for its bicycle safety program. JPD used a three-prong approach to reduce bicycle automobile accidents in the capital city. This campaign included bicycle rodeos, Spot the Chief, and Be Safe, Be Seen. At the bicycle rodeos, officers gave out bicycle helmets and taught bike safety concepts, including rules of the road and hand signals. The Spot the Chief program encouraged motorists to keep an eye out for cyclists. Drivers could win $10 for spotting the chief in his spotted shirt while biking around Juneau. The Be Safe, Be Seen program included giving out 100 sets of bicycle lights and sponsoring a community ride from downtown out to the glacier. Most importantly, the department's efforts resulted in a 38% drop in automobile versus bicycle accidents in Juneau. So I would like representatives from the police department to come up and receive the citation.
Much as I'd like to take credit for that, all the good ideas from Lieutenant Purcell.
The first Spot the Chief jersey was a cow jersey. It was the only spotted jersey I could find in Juneau, and I believe it was extra small. So it was his first summer here, and he had a good sense of humor about it, and then I finally ordered him a nicer spotted jersey. So thank you.
Good work to everyone.
Yes. Ms. White, will you present the next award, please?
Okay, and she's right. We really did clean up at the awards at Alaska Municipal League. It was almost embarrassing. So the Alaska Municipal League's Public Works Award went to the Juneau Airport for its runway rehabilitation project. The largest hurdle in the project was how to keep the airport operational while the runway was torn apart and rebuilt. The only option, since we only have one runway, was to transition the parallel taxiway into a temporary runway. This meant that the aircraft parking ramps, helicopters, and drive areas were impacted and had to be either relocated or condensed. It also meant a narrow runway width to half of its normal size. So think about that when next time you try to parallel park, imagine flying a 737. The Juneau runway rehabilitation was more than just a success for our community. It was actually a success on a national level. The project has been featured by the Federal Aviation Administration as a model project, It was completed safely and timely, despite the numerous challenges faced. The Airport Construction Advisory Council stated that they garnered a lot of good ideas on airport safety that can be implemented on future runway construction projects around the nation. So I would like people from the airport to come up, if you could, please, Scott and Patty. And then I would have also like to add that, to my knowledge, not a single flight delay happened because of this, and given the number of flights that we have in and out of Juneau and all the helicopter takeoffs and landings, that was actually a really big deal. Come on up, Patty. Okay.
So the next award goes to the Zach Gordon Youth Center. The City Spirit Award went to the Zach Gordon Youth Center Kitchen Remodel Project. In an effort to better serve the meal needs of the youth of Juneau, Christy West, who is here with us, the recently retired Zach Gordon manager, determined that the center needed a commercially rated kitchen rather than the outdated, poorly designed residential kitchen that had been used for years. In the Zach Gordon tradition, the community came together to make this project happen. Christy started to raise the necessary funds and work with local architects on the project. The contractors working on the project donated a portion of their labor. Total funds raised were $214,989. The total cost to the CBJ was $25,000, just over 11% of the overall project cost. This truly was a broad-based community fundraising effort. The Zach Gordon Youth Center serves lunch and dinner to the youth of Juneau who would otherwise go hungry. During the time the youth spend at the center, they find a safe, nurturing, and fun environment. The new kitchen is integral to the success of the operation, and the Zach Gordon Youth Center has the entire community of Juneau to thank for this project. Would Christy West and anyone else...
express that I'm honored to accept this award, but just as the award said, this was not a one-person operation. The community really came through, and there's too many names to mention right now for time, so I just want to invite people out to an open house that the new manager, Jordan Nigro, her staff and volunteers, will be offering on Wednesday, January the 20th at 4 o'clock, and this is to honor and recognize those that contributed towards this project, and to highlight the kitchen as well as the new activities that are happening at Zach Gordon. So I truly hope people will come out to support those contributors and to see that Zach Gordon's a true gem for this community, and I just invite people to come out and check it out. Thank you.
Thank you. We are very proud of our departments. And then the last one we're also very proud about. And Mr. Keel will present that award, even though he's on the phone and not here in person. It will be just as memorable. Thank you. It'll be great. So, Beth, you come up here, okay, please? Turn around to the, there's the, Mr. Keel, are you ready?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'm glad you brought Beth up. She's the one who deserves the attention here. I appreciate the opportunity. The theme of this year's Alaska Municipal League Conference was navigating through rough waters. And that actually describes a lot of what Beth does, for our city every single day. She keeps a watch on the horizon of the assembly and of the activities of the city, often keeping us away from errors and helping us steer a safe course between conflicts and the shoals of the Open Meetings Act and the Public Records Act. And I believe she's kept more than one of us off the rocks of the Conflict of Interest Code, too. Beth's duties don't stop, and her work doesn't end just with the Assembly either. She has done a tremendous amount of work for our city. She has standardized the rules of procedure for our boards so that when our many, many volunteers on our, I don't know, about three dozen boards move from one to another, they don't have changing rules between the Planning Commission and the Human Rights Commission and whatever other volunteer services they do. And she has extended her work and oftentimes her volunteer efforts far beyond that of our city as well. She has provided those board training materials to other municipalities. She's active with the Association of Municipal Clerks, helping out other municipalities around our state, which makes her a great ambassador for our capital city, I have to say. And furthermore, since she helps keep watch on the Assembly's work with liquor licenses, she has been one of the key people on a statewide stakeholder group working on proposed changes to Title IV, the Alcoholic Beverage Control Statute, at the state level. So if you have questions about Senate Bill 99, just call Beth. Don't call us. She has so far served as our deputy clerk for 15 years. Before that, she worked for the CBJ Law Department. In all of this, in addition to her other volunteer efforts in the community with church and other groups, Beth holds not just the certified municipal clerk, but actually 3 years ago she got her master municipal clerk certification. And on behalf of all of us on the Assembly and a grateful city, we applaud Beth, Alaska's Municipal Employee of the Year.
Jesse, can you hear me?
Oh, yes.
Okay. I just want to say thank you for those amazing, kind words. And it's true. It takes a village. In this case, it takes the entire community of Juneau and the statewide, the mentorship that I get from the Alaska Association of Municipal Clerks, the amazing staff that works with me, the volunteers, the assembly members. It's not just a community, but the entire state of Alaska that I am so privileged to be a public servant for. So thank you all for this honor and this recognition. And I'm very humbled by this because to me there are so many more probably unsung heroes in our municipal governments throughout the state of Alaska. So it really is an honor and a privilege to receive this award. So thank you.
Our next order of business is selection of a deputy mayor. So nominations are open.
Nominate Jesse Keel.
Yep. Jesse Keel has been nominated. Is there anyone else that you would like to put forth? Is there any objection to Jesse Keel becoming our deputy mayor?
No.
Okay. congratulations, Jesse. You are our deputy mayor.
Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Now we can, I will ask, on the traditional seat shuffle, I will do this in the order of seniority. Karen, would you like to move?
No.
Lauren?
No.
Jerry?
No.
Kate?
I'm just currently a member of the Chairs Committee, or the Lands Committee.
No, she
you'll
means
move your
seat.
I'm sorry. I was so overwhelmed by all those presentations. No, I'm very happy right where I am.
Okay. Maria?
No, thank you.
Debbie? I was going to say, well, I will, but no, I won't. Okay, we're set then. We've done our duty, and we've elected Jesse, and I'm happy about that. The approval of minutes, next thing on our agenda, we have three sets. November 9 is the first one. Are there any corrections or additions to the November 9 minutes? Seeing none, they are approved as written. November 11, are there any corrections or additions to the November 11th minutes?
Page six, we have Miss Glad again. Fifth paragraph from the bottom.
Don't see why y'all can't spell it.
Aren't you glad that people abbreviate it?
That means that's people glad. Think you're happy.
That was it.
That was it?
Never mind. Okay. I heard somebody else had turned it in.
With that correction, November 11th minutes are approved. November 30, are there any corrections or additions to the November 30 minutes? Okay. Seeing none, the November 30 minutes are also approved. Manager's request for agenda changes. Are there any agenda changes, Madam Manager?
None, thank you.
Thank you. We're now for public participation on non-agenda items. I have a list here. I don't know if everyone had a chance to sign up, but we'll just go down this list and see. Ruth Baumgartner. Would you give your name and your address, please? For the record.
My name is Ruth Baumgartner, 11027 Mendenhall Loop Road. Concern I wish to address this evening is that of compliance and enforcement of conditional use permit. I'm a neighbor whose property is adjacent to a commercial business that was granted a conditional use permit with conditions on February 11th. I have many concerns in relation to this permit and was told by the CBJ Law Department staff that the only recourse I have is through the assembly, so here I am once again. Tonight my question is whether the permit is still valid. I provided you documentation through email today, which states our beliefs that the permit is expired. The permittee did not file timely for an extension. The city review and our building permits for construction associated with the CUP have expired, and there has not been substantial construction progress as related to the permits or the project plan or description. Perhaps the language of Title 49 should be reviewed and ensure definitions are present so the ordinance can be enforced. Another issue today that I have that continues is not following the project description, project plans, nor the conditions of the permit. But today we had a delivery truck come up the shared driveway. The retail business is supposedly open from April through September, yet there was a delivery today. And needless to say, the truck could not make it up the last portion of the driveway and started sliding down towards our property and our personal vehicles that we had parked. Again, according to the project description and plan, and I quote, we would expect trucks of 20 foot or less to be delivering to our new site, end quote. What's the big deal, you ask? Again, the driveway is not wide enough nor safe enough for a truck of this size to be driving on it regularly. According to AML, who I called this morning, the box truck that visited our driveway and was trying to get up the driveway, the box part of the truck itself measures 22 feet. The cab is an additional 8 feet, obviously much larger than the 20 foot that the permittee said was going to be delivering to that site. Those deliveries also occur continuously throughout the open season. You may say I'm being nitpicky, but this is my only recourse. If you had a commercial business or a commercial retail operation in your backyard that burdened you and is running its operation with disregard to the project plan and description, as well as the conditions of the permit, Would you sit and let it happen, or would you fight back? I'm tired of the fight, but when the city continues to turn a blind eye and allows the business to run without regard for what was agreed upon by the Planning Commission, I am going to continue to fight back. I also want to address the, I don't know if it's going to be presented tonight, but you also received an email from Terry Camry, the senior planner, and I want to address some of the points that are in this that are, again, concerns from me. It says the applicant proposed using native vegetation as a buffer to adjacent lots. CDD staff observed a vegetative buffer at site visits. The project description and project conditions do not specify the width, length, or height of the buffer. Enforcement action is not needed. It's interesting, though, the application for the conditional use permit specifies, as does CBJ Administrative Code 04, what landscaping requirements are required, and those are specified with height, width, length, all that information, though it wasn't required in the application for whatever purpose, though it is on the application itself.
Ms. Baumgartner, we do have that. If you would not read the thing to us, just okay. Tell us the issue you would like us to look at.
Okay. Again, roughly the size are smaller than about the truck size and the type of trucks visiting the site. It might not say it in, as they said it, there's no record that shows it. If you look at the project plan dated October 28th, it does describe the length of the truck that he expects to be delivering. And then lastly, again, the width of the driveway. The permit condition states that the driveway will be maintained and, I don't know what the exact wording is, to 24 feet. The driveway is nowhere near 24 feet in some areas. And the city, the CDD department says that it has determined that the driveway width is substantially conforming with this condition. I don't see where it can substantially conform when the notice of decision, as signed by the Planning Commission, states, I'm going to get it out of my, sorry, I want to read it directly because it says, the Planning Commission at its regular public meeting adopted the analysis and findings listed in the attached memorandum and approved the conditional use permit to be conducted as described in the project description and project drawings submitted with the application and with the following conditions. Okay. And that condition it nowhere states that it can be substantially conformed. Prior to certificate of occupancy, that applicant shall improve and maintain the shared driveway to 24 feet in width.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any questions? Thank you. Mr. Z. Oh, was there a question? Okay.
Hello.
My
name is Anthony Zink, and I live at 11027 Mendenhall Loop Road. First, I'd like to support the comments by Ruth. Basically, this case began because our rights and property and interests were taken. You may agree or disagree, but the facts remain that I personally invested 3 years of my life to build a craftsman-style home where we plan to retire in a quiet residential neighborhood. 6 months after completion of this log home, a commercial retail business moved next door and destroyed the environment that we worked so hard to create. Put yourself in our shoes. Would you like to work and sacrifice for something only to have it taken by a government that is responsible to protect values important to Juneau residents, such as quiet residential living? And that's in the comprehensive plan, by the way. Ruth briefly mentioned one issue that I'd like to support, and that is arbitrary enforcement of legislative standards by the Community Development Department. Ruth just mentioned one example. Well, I guess she didn't mention one example. She mentioned several, but this truck going up is what I'm referring to. And by the way, that truck was backing down sideways and If it went any farther, it would have taken out a brand new truck. So, I guess getting back to these examples, there's been many others that have gone unseen and unchecked by the Community Development Department throughout this process. As Ruth stated, the Planning Commission Notice of Decision says the permittee is to implement the project in accordance with the project description and project drawings, which the plans were authorized for. Yet the plans authorized go unseen and unchecked by the Community Development Department, especially when enforcement is at issue. Another issue that will impact many others in the borough is the lack of definition of mandatory terms and language in Title 49. Substantial construction progress is one example that we described in written testimony. By intentionally not defining the mandatory term, keeping it subjective, the Community Development Department can make arbitrary decisions. Should I enforce? Should I not enforce? On a case-by-case basis. Yet the Alaska court has held that administrative agencies are bound by the terms and standards of ordinance and are not at liberty to make decisions in derogation of legislative standards. In South Anchorage Concerned Coalition versus Coffee, the Alaska court has held that we will invalidate decisions which are the result of prejudice, arbitrary decision-making, or improper motives. Thus, we respectfully request that you look into the issues that we presented in written testimony, enforcement of Title 49-15-150. We also request that you enjoin the Community Development Department to define substantial construction progress in Title 49. And ideally, have the Community Development Department review Title 49 for other omissions and terms, especially those terms that are not defined where the conditions are mandatory. And mandatory conditions in statute are those that say, shall do this, shall do that. For example, Title 01-15-010 defines, that's a statute that references definitions. May is permissive, must and shall are each mandatory. And believe me, there's a lot of mandatory terms in Title 49 that do not have definitions. That is a public disservice.
Thank you. Are there questions? Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Steve Hamilton. Oh, is that okay? Excuse me. No, you can't. It's
a
special election. No.
Okay. I question that.
You got to wait.
Sorry.
I sent an email though.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm sorry that I didn't notice that. I was so anxious to have listen to you, Mr. Hamilton. Thank you. Glenn Hay.
Hey, my name is Glenn Haight.
New business. Is it something we have on our agenda that he's talking about?
Steve.
Oh, not Glenn. Okay. Sorry. I'm sorry.
Should I go?
With this table talk, is just got to quit.
That's better.
Go ahead.
My name is Glenn Haight. I live at 1514 Lincourt with my family. Mayor Becker, members of the Assembly, happy holidays to you. It was great to see Beth honored here. I had an opportunity to work on the Fisheries Development Committee for a few years, and she was great to work with. She definitely kept us in line. I'm here today to speak in honor of Mayor Greg Fisk. I worked with Greg on and off for about 10 years in the field of fisheries development. Certainly with his passing, I think we think about things that he was going to do or work on, and it could be that you've already heard these things that I'll talk about, but having worked with him for as long as I did, I think I have a good sense of the kinds of things he was thinking about with fisheries development and the things he would have worked on here, so I just kind of felt like it was important to come and get it off my chest. So I ran into Greg probably about a week before he passed away, outside the post office. He was excited about his work as mayor. He was busy. He had told me that he had recently heard from OMB, I think you all had, that Juno had already lost, I think it was 300 real estate jobs. I could have that number off, but it was considerable. I had mentioned that I had done some review recently or months before about property value declines in the late 80s when we had our crash, and the property values in Juneau, I think, fell from 30%. And so to the extent that that might translate to real impact for us now, that was significant. So he was optimistic. He was talking about things that were happening and very positive. He mentioned he thought there was some movement in getting some of the Alaska Fisheries Science Center's jobs, further jobs up to Lena. And that was one of the things that he was always dogged about, was the getting the marine science and fisheries biology research capacity here in Juneau. And whether it was federal or state, that was something he spoke of passionately, and he was working on that. So it's a hard battle, and there's things that we can do, but we need to be persistent in that. So I would encourage the city as much as it can to continue to pursue that work. I mean, bringing those people here, I mean, they really are talented, they're intelligent, they create excellence in our community in those fields, and that has a lot of ancillary benefits. So I'll hand this out later. I've got like actionable items that you might want to think about pursuing. It's too much to talk about here, but I will try to be quick. Another thing Greg talked a lot about was business location, increasing the commercial fishery and business jobs here. So just looking at the permit numbers we have from CFEC, there's about 215 to 220 permit holders in Juneau, and that's been fairly consistent for the last 10 years. However, the number of permits that those individuals are fishing has declined from about 3.2 to 2.3 in this last 10 years. That means there's less fisheries that those individuals are pursuing, so they're less diversified. And that's a problem when there's a downturn in a fishery. So it's important that to the extent we can, that those individuals are pursuing a lot of different fisheries. Greg talked about simple business location services, and this is a common economic development tool where you try to attract businesses into town, into Juneau. He talked about sending mailers, promotional mailers, to young fishermen, non-resident Alaskans, as well as crew members. These are things that we can do. You could promote with other coastal communities at the Pacific Marine Expo and talk about Juneau as a place to live, to raise your family, and to work your fishing business. So they're simple things, but they could lead to increased jobs. 5 minutes. Okay. Another area that I think Greg would have focused on, been a big supporter of course, he was a supporter of post-secondary education, but he also found value in career paths that led to real jobs. And there are a lot of high-value jobs in the maritime industry, significantly valuable. Recently, the Council of Seattle and King County put out their estimate of the value of maritime businesses and industries to the state of Washington. It's $30 billion. Last I checked, Alaska's gross state product was $50 billion. So that's a significant, valuable industry that we could work on attracting and building talent here. When I was with the Department of Commerce a couple of years ago, I did a business retention expansion survey of maritime businesses. And a couple of things that were outstanding from that review that I would take is that they were businesses that could grow. They had business that they could pursue. And their major challenge was workforce availability and quality. One of the things we can do here is we can try to direct our schools working with universities to ramp up vocational technical work, perhaps through the choice program. I'll finish the thought. And give some kids real career tracks in these jobs. I'll stop there.
Thank you, Mr. Haight.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? Ms. Troll has a question.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I guess it's more of a comment, and I really appreciate you coming forward and hope that you will share a copy of your notes with all of us. And having worked with you previously, I know that you're a real practical, hands-on person, so if you will continue to stay engaged, I think we all would welcome that. And just to let you know that myself and city manager and city staff today had a visit out with the NOAA facility and Doug DeMaster.
Oh, really?
So we very much want to carry on many of the things that Greg had aspired to, and appreciate you coming forward and sharing those specific thoughts, and please stay engaged.
Thank you. I will, Kate. Appreciate your comments. Can I just hand these off to Rob here?
Oh. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for your work.
Thank you. Don Hayberger, are you? Yes, you're here.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, members of the Assembly. For the record, my name is Don Hayberger. My address is 9300 View Drive. Try to be very brief, but I just wanted to bring to your attention an effort that the Juneau Reentry Coalition is undergoing in the next 6 months. The Reentry Coalition has partnered with the Department of Corrections as well as the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority, and they're embarking on an effort in partnership to have our reentry citizens successfully come into the community, taking advantage of our resources and being successful in reentry. In that effort, the Juneau Reentry Coalition has brought me aboard recently. I'm their community coordinator, and we are going to take an assessment of our assets in the community, whether they are mental health, physical health, housing, transit, hope to include law enforcement as a stakeholder, and engage in a community assessment looking at all those assets that we currently have, looking at any gaps that we may have in assets such as substance abuse programming, and finally find any barriers that may exist in our community to prevent somebody from successful reentry. Using that data, we'll begin talking with any stakeholder in the community that wishes to be involved in it, and finally coming out with a community plan to better reentry. So that's all I wanted to do, is just bring you up to speed on something that the Reentry Coalition is doing. We'll be talking to some of our public sector entities, transit, for example. Police department already sent a letter out to them asking if they would talk to me about this effort. And that's the plan.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Other questions? Okay. Thank you very much. Keep up the good work. That ends our public testimony. And so we now will go to the consent agenda. Is there anyone in the public who would like to remove something from the consent agenda other than an ordinance for introduction? Okay. Assembly, does anyone have a change? Yes.
Yes, I'd like to remove Resolution 2734 regarding the Juneau Ocean Center.
Okay. Is there anything else from the Assembly? Okay. Assembly action, Ms. Crane.
Move to adopt the consent agenda with the exception of Resolution 2734A.
Thank you. The consent agenda is accepted except for that one removal, which we will now we'll discuss, 2734.
Okay,
so,
thank
Ms. Glashefsky.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I don't object. I just wanted to talk about the very, so for Assembly members, it's on page 62 and 63 of your packet. Section 1, it says, resolved, the Assembly hereby expresses its support for the Juneau Ocean Center and associated seawalk design. I would propose we remove the words "and associated seawalk design" because there really is no associated seawalk design. We haven't designed it. That's all. I support the center. I'm not supporting the seawalk design since we haven't even started on that. that was my suggestion. My motion is to remove the words "and associated Siwak design" from the text.
Okay, you've heard the motion. Is there discussion? Ms. Troll.
Yeah, I guess maybe Madam Manager can help me clarify. I thought this was in reference to the fact that in our long-term waterfront plan, we had identified the potential need for an easement across the subport property so that the Siwak could be continuous through that area. And so there, conceptually, there is a connection to the location of the Juneau Ocean Center and making sure that our long-term aspirations for where the Siwak goes would fit. Am I correct on that?
Correct. The long-range waterfront plan has the Siwak going from the bridge to the little rock dump. And so we tried to address it in here just in general that it's part of that overall big plan. We haven't moved forward on it, but we do want to move forward on the section from Gold Creek basically back to Marine Park. And this area is part of that planning area.
Yes. Right. My only point is that there are no detailed designs. There's a concept to have a Siwak from the bridge to the rock dump, so, and something I completely support. I just don't know what I'm supporting by saying "and associated Siwak design" here. We don't have any, that's all.
You're correct in that we don't have specifics, but we have a concept.
Concept. Is there anything else, Ms. Manager, you would like to say about that?
No, thank you.
Okay. The motion's on the floor to remove Siwak design from Resolution 2734. Is there objection? There is objection. Would you like to speak to your objection?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Just briefly, I think the whole thing, as Assemblymember Troll said, the whole thing is conceptual. The whole thing is conceptual, and I think that's what we're supporting is the concept of that. So that's basically the foundation for my objection. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Okay. So would you call the roll, please, Madam Clerk?
Ms. Gladyszewski?
Yes.
Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Mr. Nankervis?
No.
Ms. Troll?
No.
Ms. White?
No.
Ms. Crane?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Mayor Becker?
Yes.
Motion carries 5A, 3-nay.
Okay. So, yes,
I would move Resolution 2734.
Thank you. Is there objection? Okay. 2734 has been approved, and that approves the entire consent agenda. Okay. We are now going to public hearing.
Bit of word.
I'm sorry, did I miss something?
Yeah, bit of word.
Excuse me?
Bit of word. Oh, it's part of it. Never mind. Okay. I'm bad. Public hearing. You got it. Okay. You blame it on me.
It's all right. We are in public hearing now. And the first ordinance up for public hearing is Ordinance 2015-44. Madam Clerk, will you read the title?
An ordinance amending the real and personal property tax code to repeal the property tax deferral and create a property tax exemption for certain subdivided property.
Thank you. Madam Manager, staff report.
Thank you. Last session, the legislature amended AS 2945050 by adding an optional exemption that authorizes municipalities to exempt all or a portion of an increase in assessed value directly attributable to the subdivision of a single parcel of property into three or more lots. This ordinance would provide for the allowable exemption with the exemption terminating for each individual lot when the lot's ownership is transferred, a residential commercial structure has been completed on the lot, and a certificate of occupancy or a temporary certificate of occupancy has been issued, or taxes have been exempted for 3 years. While the status permits statute permits up to 5 years for the exemption. It's staff's recommendation that the exemption be limited to 3 years to serve the public purpose of increasing housing and promoting development. In 2013, the Assembly created an exemption for the deferral of increased taxes caused by a subdivision. No one has taken advantage of that opportunity. This ordinance, if adopted, would replace the property tax deferral with a tax exemption. The ordinance was drafted at the request of the Committee of the Whole at its August 24, 2015 meeting, and on December 1st, the Affordable Housing Commission passed a unanimous motion supporting a 5-year period for a tax abatement policy. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the public who would like to testify concerning Ordinance 2015-44? Okay. All right. There are three people. Is that correct? Okay. Let's four.
Three more.
Okay. Well, may I see how many people want to testify on this so we know how long to give you? Oh, one, two, three, four, five. Okay. Let's keep it at 3 minutes. And whoever would like to go first?
I'm there now. I wasn't this morning, but I read everything.
I don't know how to do that exactly. Mm-hmm.
Hi, please state your name and give us your address.
Hi, my name is Gerald Grant, 3170 Noel Avenue, Juneau, Alaska. I would like to have this, I'm for the measure, but I would like to see it as a 5-year measure instead of three. It's a lot of hard work's been put in there from Kathy Munoz to rewrite it, write it, and rewrite it for that we have something that works for us to provide housing for you. Right now, it's AOMP. When we build a subdivision, they kick back for 5 years. They will give us a portion of the money that we put down for utilities. They reimburse us, and that's a 5-year thing. Then after that, it defers to the owner of the property. So I'm not really sure where you got the 3 years, but it's already been placed that ALP notices a 5-year kickback for us.
Thank you, Mr. Grant. Are there questions for Mr. Grant? No. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Mr. Hanna, did you want to come up next?
Thank you, Madam Mayor, members of the Assembly. For the record, my name is Dave Hanna. I live at 11495 Mendenhall Loop Road. And I expect you've all had a chance to read my letter, so I'm not going to read through that whole thing again. But I would just like to strongly make note that all those points are very real. The fact that we are going to be in somewhat of a recession for the next few years is just a real suppressing factor for anybody wanting to develop new property. The fact that the specter of the capital move is always out there, it's very real. Most of us move past that, but a lot of people don't, so they don't want to buy. So that's another thing that depresses the market. The thing about the cost of developing and how long it takes to develop it is very real. I actually got off the phone with a friend of mine, Spike McNell, who, along with the Grants, has probably developed more property than all the rest of us put together in this town. And he agrees that 5 years is the bare minimum before you can move a subdivision through. It just takes so long. By the time you get the land cleared, you get utilities in, you get the streets paid, you go to actually clear the lots and get them ready for people to build on, 3 years, that's just about where you're ready to start selling lots. And the truth of the matter is, those taxes are what, they're a big part of the holding cost of a subdivision. If you look at how much it actually costs to build a subdivision, that $1,000 a foot for a street, that's not an exaggeration. That's what it really costs. And you start going out and borrowing that money, you have a pretty substantial load. And all of a sudden, you take another $1,000 or $1,500 a lot on top of that, and you've basically almost doubled the holding costs of building your subdivision. And that cost will get passed on to the consumers. You just don't have any choice. So I would really like you to not think of this 3 year versus 5 years of giving up revenue for the city. I'd like you to think of it as an opportunity to create incentives for the city to receive more revenue sooner. This whole specter of being saddled with these extra taxes and not getting your subdivision built on time, it's very real, and it keeps many people from ever moving forward on a piece of property. And if we can put a tool out there, which incidentally was vetted by people all over the state, including municipal administrators, asking for this 5 years so they could stimulate development in their communities, this 5 years is not at all unrealistic. For many of us, we feel it's not enough, of course. But 5 years, that's enough time. It gives us enough breathing room to actually get some land developed, get it out there in the market, and get it into the hands of the consumers and at a cheaper price. So if we want to promote affordable housing, lowering the cost, which includes not being burdened with that tax burden before you even have a chance to sell a lot, that's a real strong motivator to get more out there to the people. More choices and cheaper choices. Thank you,
Mr. Hanna. Are there questions? Okay, thank you. I don't know who is next, but okay.
Thank you, members of the Assembly, for the opportunity to come here tonight. My name is Russ McDougall. I sit on the Affordable Housing Commission. I'm on the Southeast Alaska Building Industry Association Board of Directors and the Alaska State Home Builders Board of Directors. This measure, this new law that was drafted, was brought to us by some local contractors here who took it to Kathy Munoz, who used to be on the Affordable Housing Commission chair position prior to serving for the state legislature. So she was vetted in this action from the beginning. There's a number of people that have put an awful lot of time in this. I believe you have a letter in your packet from the Affordable Housing Commission, and I believe also from the Southeast Alaska Building Industry Association, asking that we keep this to 5 years, not three. We don't want to shortchange our community with this burden of taxation. This is an opportunity for these landowners and developers to get lots at a reasonable price to our community, and that's what we're asking you to do. Make it 5 years, please.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. McDougall?
No.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Hi. Thanks for this opportunity. My name is Bruce Griggs. I live at 13948 Glacier Highway. I came tonight because I have actually been bitten by this property tax subdivision debacle, and I developed a piece of property back in 07, right before we got hit by the financial crisis. And what happened was, we got the land subdivided, got started, and as soon as we subdivided that land, the property tax went from X to 3X. And what happened was, it takes a while, like Mr. Hanna says, to develop the property. By the time we got it developed, the market had fallen, so we actually had to sit on this property for 7 years. And back then the property tax went up. As soon as the property was platted, it would go up. So this ordinance will really help us. But in my case then, it wouldn't have helped me that much because I had to sit on that property for 4 years, and the amount of taxation on that property almost bankrupted the project. So, like I said, I'm here just because I've been bitten by it, and honestly, 3 years is almost like a trap for us. It's like, oh, here's an incentive, and you get in there and go, well, I think I can make it work, but then, and especially if you're going to do more than just a few lots, if you get 10, 12, 20 lots out there, and you're sitting on those for more than 3 years, it's really going to hurt. And we've actually seen examples in the past where people have lost their property to the city, like Blueberry Hills back in the 80s. That was a property tax thing as well. So that's about all I got.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Thank you very much for your testimony. We're done? Okay. Thank you. We're back to the Assembly. Yes, Ms. Kwiatkowski.
I'd like to move this ordinance 2015-44 and move two amendments on page 1 of 3, line 25, change 5 to 3, and then on page 2 of 3, line 22, change, or the other way around. Excuse me.
If you wanted to go to 5, it's the other
indeed,
way around.
Indeed. I wanted to make it go to 5. Change 3 to 5. And then on line 22 of page 2, make it 3 to 5. And I just would speak to that. We heard from the people today and also via email, and it seems like a good idea to me.
Thank you, Ms. White. I agree 100%, but I would like to know who is here to speak from CDD. I do have a couple of questions. Would that be?
Yeah, Mr. Steele.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Steele, in the packet, it says that the staff recommended that the exemption be limited to 3 years to serve the public purpose of increasing housing and promoting development. You have the Home Builders Association, our state legislature, the Planning Commission, the Affordable Housing Commission, and I don't even remember what that housing study from CZB cost. This said, and that one said, government was the problem. And how could this possibly, looking at the history of things, I mean, last time we talked about this, and I said it should be 5 years, I brought up the example of Montana Creek West. So this time I decided to look at another subdivision that went up like lightning, Moraine Edge, Steelhead Street. That property was bought in 2004. It took them about a year and a half to clear the lot. It took them more than a year to get through the paperwork process, and then they could finally start building the houses. So it went from 2004 almost to 2009. And that is one of our most prolific builders. And as somebody in my industry, it seemed like that happened overnight. So I just don't understand how staff even thought for a minute 3 years was a good idea. You guys see how long this takes,
Mr. C.
So to clarify, CDD was not involved in those discussions. This is a property tax issue, and community development staff is not the staff that made this recommendation. This recommendation came from me as deputy manager talking with people in our finance department. Based on everything that I've heard, I believe 5 years is the way to go, and that it was a mistake to reduce it to 3 years. And I take responsibility for that.
Okay.
Thank you. Appreciate
you.
That. Yes, Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I would like to make an amendment on this as well. And I'd like to move to add a Section 3.
Clarification, we already have a motion on the table.
I thought we voted on that.
No, we didn't. It has not been voted on. I apologize. So we need to.
On the amendment?
We have not voted on not voted on the motion that Ms. Gladys has put forward.
No, we have not voted on that.
Okay. Then I'll wait.
Did you bring forth the motion? No, actually, Maria brought forth the motion to change it to 5 years. Yeah. I just wanted the clarification. Yeah.
And I thought she asked for unanimous consent, and the mayor asked for no objections, and there wasn't any.
No, there was.
Okay.
I did actually do two things at the same time. I did ask to move the whole ordinance, but I guess I need to just do the amendment first.
And are you asking for unanimous?
And I'm asking for unanimous consent on that amendment to change it to 5 years in both places in the ordinance.
All right. That's the motion on the floor. Is there any objection to that? Okay. That motion passes. It's changed to 5 years. Mr. Jones.
Thank you. I would like to move an amendment to add a Section 3, repeal of ordinance, and move that the amendments and that repeal would read the amendments made by this ordinance to CBJ 69.10.022 shall be repealed 3 years from the date of adoption, provided that any exception granted under CBJ 6910022 in effect on the date of the repeal remain in effect. And if I could speak to that?
Please do.
I had originally looked at trying to put a sunset clause in here that if nobody took advantage of this in 3 years, it would go away, given that the state passed the law to defer. We passed an ordinance to defer based on testimony and public testimony, and nobody took advantage of it. And So now we have change in the state law. We have people here testifying that they want it for 5 years. And I wanted some way to, if nobody took advantage of it, the economy turned down, whatever, that we would get a chance to repeal the ordinance since it wasn't being used. And the law department said that that probably wouldn't work. And so suggested this amendment. And I think what this does is in 3 years, when this gets up for termination, the assembly can take a look, see how many people have taken advantage of it, see if it has increased the housing stock as it's supposed to, if the developers made sure all their promises that they're going to do the subdivisions and do all this stuff, then the assembly can extend the ordinance or take away the repeal date. But this basically says in 3 years, if the assembly needs to look at it and if people haven't used it, then we should repeal it. So that's my amendment.
Can I just ask a clarification question? So what are you saying, in 3 years you want it to be reviewed by the assembly, or are you saying in 3 years you want it to be repealed? Because one's kind of permanent, the other's a review.
My understanding of the process of this assembly is if you have an ordinance that has a sunset date, it comes up for review by the assembly prior to that sunset date. So that's what I mean. It'll come up automatically. So basically, this says in 3 years, this will be repealed unless the assembly does something.
Ms. White? I definitely have an objection to that. Due to another matter on our agenda this evening, I was looking at some really old assembly minutes from 1995. I think a lot of you were too as well. And that is the first mention in city records that I could find of what we are now calling the Renager subdivision, that we still haven't figured out how we're going to roll that out and start selling the lot. Which means it was still just a concept 20 years ago. So we're the government, and if we can't do it in 20 years, you're thinking the builders are supposed to be able to snap their fingers and make it done. And the real estate cycle, everything goes up and down, it ebbs and it flows. These guys literally have, in some cases, millions of dollars tied up. That last subdivision that I referred to, Moraine Edge, before a single foundation was dug, there was over $1.5 million, not counting land acquisition costs, tied up in that project. So, no, I definitely object. This needs to be a long-term solution. Juneau's had a housing problem for as long as I can remember. My parents moved here in 1970. They didn't move me up here until 1974, strictly because they couldn't find a house to live in. So that's been a lot longer. We have to make some long-term big decisions that are going to change things. That's what our housing advisors told us.
Mr. Jones?
I guess in response, I'm not changing the 5 years exemption period. I'm not changing from no exemptions. I'm simply saying in 3 years we'll review this again, and if nobody's used it, and if I understand the process that Ms. White and the other developers talked about, the minute they plat it or the minute they subdivide it, they can apply for the exemption. And if it takes 20 years, after 5 years, they're going to start paying the taxes anyway, because that's the way this ordinance reads. This simply sunsets this ordinance unless the assembly acts. And if they have used it, and there's and many, many lots have been exempted from the property taxes, and we know that it's working, and we've increased the housing stock, then the assembly can easily extend this back again. But it doesn't change the 5 years. If somebody puts in an application, gets the exemption, and 20 years later hasn't developed it, they still only get 5 years of the exemption. Says nothing to do with the overall length of time. It just puts in a review process.
Ms. Glacheski?
I just, thank you, Madam Mayor. I need you to repeat the language, or do you have it written somewhere?
I have it written down. It basically says, the amendments made by this ordinance, the CBJ 6910-022, shall be repealed 3 years from the date of adoption, provided that any exemption granted under 6910-022 in effect on the date of the repeal remain in effect.
Madam Mayor.
Yes, Mr. Keel.
I just need a little bit of clarification either from Mr. Jones or perhaps from the attorney. Those exemptions remain in effect. Do we understand that to mean on the same terms? So, for instance, if you had 4 years left, you'd still have 4 years left, not the rest of the year?
Your first comment was correct. It remains in effect under the ordinance as it reads now. So if someone were to apply for the exemption on the last day before the ordinance repealed under the sunset clause, they would get the full 5-year exemption.
Mr. Keel, is there a follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. In follow-up, I can support a sunset review. I think that we'll be back here in 2 years deleting the sunset because we'll find this to be pretty effective. I guess I'm cautioned a little bit that I had hopes for the deferral process, but in the end, that was a situation where, you know, if you were subdividing lots and you thought you stood to save carrying costs of $400 a year on each lot, you still had to spend $150 plus a couple hours of staff time to record a lien, and it just wasn't worth it. This is a much simpler, much cleaner process. And I think we've heard from the development community tonight that it's very attractive to them, that it's one of those things that can move the needle a little bit on a project or a problem where we need to move the needle a lot. And so I don't think that we're going to see, any reason, to let that sunset happen. I think we'll be back here, taking that off. But folks in Juneau are pretty used to sunset dates and sunset reviews. I mean, they certainly happen at the state all the time, and the vast majority of them, the result of a sunset review is this program is working. It's doing what it was supposed to do. We recommend you continue it. So I think that this is Mr. Jones's proposal is reasonable enough. I think we'll find ourselves happy with it a few years out.
Thank you, Mr. Keel. Mr. Jones, just clarification for me again. Does your amendment make it clear that we are talking about reviewing before it's repealed? We're reviewing it, and if we review and decide to extend it, it's fine. If we don't decide to extend it, then it will be repealed. Do you feel like it's clear enough in there?
Madam Mayor, I think that having worked with sunset clauses before and having had ordinances come before us that have had sunset clauses on it, it'll come back to us for review by staff before the sunset clause takes effect.
Okay. All right. Ms. White, and then Ms. Glacheski.
I want to try this one more time just because I see the process unfolding. So we're in the middle of winter right now. A builder who sees this is going to probably, if they don't already own the land, they're going to look for it next year, get their offer on it, get their financing, close on it. So that's going to take them. If they start looking in February, they're going to have their property middle of March. Then they have to get a wetlands determination. After all, Moraine Edge started out as 13 acres. They had to give 7 of it to the Southeast Land Trust and paid for the privilege. So if you run into wetlands, then you lose time. Then you get the paper plat. Then you have to go get it actually physically platted, We don't have enough surveyors as it is. I really don't even think 3 years is enough time to even hardly get the ball rolling. And I don't see what the harm is of having it out there. If we see that it's becoming a problem, we can do another ordinance and get rid of it. But if I were a builder and I thought, well, they might pull the rug out from under me in 3 years, I'm not sure I would take that financial risk. And I've made it clear, if I had a big old pot of money and I was a developer, I'd pack it up in a suitcase and take it somewhere else. We've got to stop yanking these guys' chain. I'm not in favor of a sunset clause. I'm sorry.
Ms. Glashevsky. I just, again, want to, along the same lines as Mayor Becker, how will staff know this is coming up and about to be? It doesn't say shall be reviewed. It says shall be repealed. This is what the language says. How do we know we're going to know that it's about to expire?
And that's what I was just asking the city attorney. I don't know that when we've had sunsets, that it automatically comes back. So I'll have to check past practice on whether or not we bring those forward to the assembly and say this is about to sunset. Do you want to keep that sunset clause in place? I don't know. I'll have to look at that.
Can we come up with some language that says something like that here now? It shall be reviewed.
So if it's repealed, then it doesn't come back to the assembly. It goes back to the deferral instead of the exemption. That's what it would go back to if it's repealed. So I don't know. Could you do language that makes it come back to the assembly?
Ms. Becker, could we have a break?
A break.
Yes, let's have a break while you think about whether or not you can do any language for us on this. We'll just take a 5 minutes to be all right with everyone.
If not working, then go back and repeal it. Don't put us
5 minute break.
You are tuned to KTOO in Juneau, Alaska. Thanks for joining us this evening for tonight's broadcast of the CBJ meeting. The assembly is currently taking a 5-minute break. Tonight, rain and snow showers developing in the evening, snow accumulation to 1 inch, lows 27 to 35. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, scattered rain and snow showers, highs around 35.
Is back in order. I believe next to speak was Mr. Nankervis and then Ms. Troll.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I object to the amendment as proposed. I don't believe there was anything proposed in the language that said it comes back to the Assembly. It said that it goes away. And I believe to put a 3-year window on this is pretty disingenuous to what we're trying to do, which is promote housing. And I could say a lot more, but I'm not going to. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Troll?
Yeah, I appreciate where Mr. Jones is coming from to make sure that, you know, we evaluate the effectiveness, because there's lots of things that we take action on that we want to make sure accomplishes those goals. I guess I would rather go forward rather as opposed to back into a review. I think what we're doing here by making it 5 years, we're sending a really positive signal to the building community. We're giving you a break. We know it's a huge difference between a tax deferment and a tax exemption. So I have no doubt that it will be taken care of. So my preference is that, in about 3 years' time, we ask the staff, you know, by the way, you know, how is it working? We can do that at any time. So I would rather go forward, send out a positive message, put the right perception on this, that we're really trying to change the game up for housing, and certainly call for a review in a timely manner. So I will be voting against this amendment.
Thank you. Ms. Lachesky?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'm going to vote against this. There is no mechanism to in code to put it in ordinance. It would just disappear, and I don't want that to happen. So as with any ordinance, we can always review it anytime we want. I too appreciate the heads up that we should be looking at these sorts of things, and I'd be happy that an assembly in 3 years begin to look at it, but I don't think it should automatically go away.
Thank you. The amendment before us is the repeal amendment that Mr. Jones offered, and is there objection to that passing? Okay. Madam Clerk, there is objection.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Ms. Gladyszewski?
No.
Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Mr. Nankervis?
No.
Ms. Troll?
No.
Ms. White?
No.
Ms. Crane?
No.
Mayor Becker?
No.
Motion fails.
Thank you. Our next ordinance is
We need to vote the ordinance.
Oh, that's right. We got to do the whole thing. I'm just trying to whip us through after this long time. I'm sorry. We need a motion for this ordinance. Thank you. To pass. Is there one? Ms. Fletcher.
I would move ordinance 2015-44 as amended and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Thank you. It has ordinance 2015-44 has passed the assembly with the amendments that were voted on. May I go to the next one now? Am I okay? ordinance 2015-20X, Madam Clerk.
An ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $5,487.44 as funding for the reimbursement of bulletproof vests for JPD officers, funding provided by the U.S. Department of Justice.
Madam Manager, staff report.
The Department of Justice offers a bulletproof vest partnership program to law enforcement agencies across the nation. JPD has a mandatory vest wear policy, which makes our agency eligible for this particular reimbursement. There's a 50-50 match program. JPD has the 50% in their existing budget. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the public who would like to testify on this ordinance? Okay. Assembly, Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I move adoption of ordinance 2015-20X and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Ordinance 2015-20X passes the assembly. We are now into unfinished business. And I don't believe there is any.
No.
Okay. We're at new business, the senior citizen exemption late file for Ann Kennedy. Madam Manager, do you have any statement about that?
No, the information is in your packet.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Green?
I move approval of the senior citizen exemption late file for Kennedy. And ask for unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Okay. That is accepted as a late. Next one is the senior citizen exception late file. Christine Trott. Yes, Ms. Green.
I move approval of a senior citizen exemption late file for Trott and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Okay, that is approved for Ms. Trott. Okay, we're now to the special election discussion. That discussion is now open. Yes, Mr. Nankervis.
Somebody needs to go first, so I will. I am not in favor of having a special election for the position of mayor, but I think that we need to do some things that we've talked about in the past, but came up at the last meeting regarding filling the Assembly District 1 seat that you vacated when you stepped into the mayor's office, Madam Mayor. And I believe last time this occurred that we had a vacancy like this was Mr. Anderson. John Anderson left his teaching job at the university and went somewhere else. And I think that was the most recent example of filling vacancy on the assembly. And that, my recollection, is that the assembly had an open filing period for people that live in that district that could file and basically do an application to us, and then we would review those applications and then an executive session make a decision based on that. And I believe there might have been an interview as well, but I'm not sure about that. Maybe somebody who was here for that could speak to that. I wouldn't have been privy to that portion of it. But I am not interested in having a special election in the spring. I think that we just go with the cards we've got right now and roll it into the next municipal election in October. And I guess we could discuss that. We had a letter that we could discuss whether we should have our municipal election in October or November. I believe in the charter it says October. So that's why we do it in October. But I would be willing to listen to what everybody else has to say on this topic. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Jones.
Oh, thank you. I think the last two vacancies, I think Mr. Anderson and Mr. Dahl both left at the same time, and there was not an application period. I think the mayor at that time brought forward a slate of people to fill in until October, until the election and the assembly acted on that. Prior to that, there had been application periods. I don't have any problem with an application period. I think my objection the last couple of times that this came up was that we were having those discussions before we had a called meeting about the subject. So I don't have any objections to that at all. I am in support of a special election, however, and when the time comes, I'll be willing to make a motion to that effect. But right now, I'll just state that I think I am in favor of a special election.
Are there other comments? I think we should break these two apart.
Yeah.
There's the mayor one that has to be decided, and then we decide how we're going to fill the district one. So yeah. let's do that first. Mr.
Okay, if we want to do the mayor one, then I would move in accordance with CBJ 2907010, I move to call a special election to be held on March 15th for the purpose of electing a successor for the mayoral seat, and to direct staff to prepare an ordinance providing that the acting assembly member appointed to the current District 1 vacant seat serve until a successor is elected, or should Mayor Becker decline to run for the mayoral election until a successor mayor is elected and Ms. Becker return to her District 1 seat.
So we are putting those two together.
No.
So you're asking for a special election for the mayor.
Special election for the mayor, and if you choose not to run when the mayor is then seated, you would go back into your district one seat.
Thank you.
That's the effect of my motion.
Okay, all right. Ms. Troll.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'd like to speak in favor of this motion. I've given it a lot of thought. First off, thinking in terms of Mayor Fisk and his vision and what is most fitting for that. I've also have talked to a lot of people, in the supermarkets and on the streets, and lots of people have stopped and talked to me and said they would very much like a special election. This was a leadership position. In the past, when we've had some vacancies, it was a little bit later in the year, and this followed. Mayor Fisk was elected, but with a strong show of support in all the precincts. So I think there is a desire out there for people to be able to vote on a leadership position, and I also believe that it is a way of making all of us, including the community, move on through this difficult time. And there's a cost factor of $35,000. And in terms of the value and the merit and goodwill that could come out of a special election, I think that cost is more than borne out. And we have a healthy reserve We can definitely afford to have a special election, and I just really feel that. So I've looked at it from the community's perspective, my perspective, the assembly perspective, what I've heard from constituents, and feel that this is definitely the best move forward to have a special election for the mayor in March.
Thank you.
Are there other comments? I have a question for the Madam Clerk. Mr. Jones' motion says March 15th. Is that possible? That's not on your timeline as being that.
That would include a shortened time period for people to hear about the election and apply for the seat, to file for the seat. You would shorten the filing time prior to the filing period.
Madam Mayor, I've worked out a little bit of a different time schedule, and in talking to the prior to the clerk, she basically said that we could set those times as we wanted to. I just have some suggested times, but I think that's up for the clerk to work.
Okay. So the 15th is not in stone for you.
The 15th is the date I would like to hold the election. All of that leading up to the election, I think, has to be changed, and however that can be done, but I think the election should be held on the 15th.
Okay. Ms. White.
You know, I guess I'm trying to figure out how much difference this is between this time and when Byron Mallott stepped down from being mayor. Deputy mayor went into the mayor position. That was Dennis Egan. They got 28 applications. One of them was Kathy Munoz. Both of those people went on and are still conserving. They're still serving our community. So I don't think they made a bad choice. I personally think that we've set a precedence as to what we're supposed to be doing when this happens.
Thank you. Mr. Keel, I should ask if you have anything you would like to add to this.
I had not asked to speak. I have been grappling with this question at great length, and my contacts from the public have run about 50-50, and those folks who have asked for an election have been pretty passionate about it, and so I am torn. My inclination has always been, when there's a difficult question, to err on the side of more democracy. I guess I'm inclined toward asking the voters on this question. But I will listen to the rest of the debate as well.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Jones.
I guess just in response to Ms. White, when current Lieutenant Governor Mallott resigned, it was at the end of February. If an election would have been held within 45 or 50 days and then almost 60 days, we would have been about 5 months from October. This vacancy occurred almost 11 months before the election. If we hold the election in March, it's still almost 7 months before the October election. And I think that that time difference is significant for me anyway, in that I would like to make sure that the community has a say on who the elected mayor is. And I think that given that Mayor Fisk's term was a 3-year term, this is basically 6 months of that 3-year term would have gone past as we were getting ready to hold this election and before we seat another mayor. So we have somebody for 2.5 years. And so I think it's important that the people have the say and have the say as soon as possible.
Mr. Nankervis?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Yeah, I think this issue is a lot like an iceberg. There's a whole lot under the water that you don't see, just a little bit sticking above. I think the precedent's been set. Ms. White made that comment. We've been through this before. What they did before was, as you said, had Dennis sitting in the chair in the mayor's seat until the next election in the fall, and I've already spoken to that briefly before. So I'm not in favor of having a special election. I'm not in favor of spending the money. And the vast majority of people that have spoken to me have indicated they don't want to. I've had two people indicate that they do want a special election. And as Mr. Keel said, they were adamant that they wanted a special election. But I guess I had people that were just as adamant saying they didn't want a special election. But I had far more people come to me and say that they didn't want a special election. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Lachowski?
I'd just say that I, too, have talked to a bunch of people about this. This is not an easy call, I don't think. I guess the thing that's tipping me into being in favor of it is the time when Lieutenant Governor Malott resigned. It was, as someone's already mentioned, February. This is a long time to not have an elected mayor. It is a special position. It's the leadership position, and I think people deserve one that they vote for. So right now I would be in favor of having an election as soon as possible.
Okay. Is there anyone else who wants to speak? Ms. Stroll.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I just want to touch on the fact that I think this is a very different situation than what we had previously with Mayor Balot. You know, we just had a newly elected mayor bring a lot of new energy into the community. It wasn't a resignation. It was a sudden passing away. I mean, the circumstances are very different than what the Assembly had to consider when Mayor Malott resigned. And that's what I'm responding to, are those different situations. And the people that I've talked to in the community that have contacted me, those are the points that they've brought up repeatedly. So that's, I think, an important difference, and that's what's making me feel pretty steadfast that having an election in March is the best way to proceed.
Ms. White, were you?
Yeah, I'd just like to add, you know, I've talked to a lot of people in that are very politically active. I've had all of two tell me that they wanted a special election. I don't even know that we're going to get any kind of a turnout having an election in, what was it, March or
March 15th.
And as far as, you know, comparing this to Malott, it's three meetings different, three assembly meetings different. I know it's much different and very tragic circumstances, but the precedent has been set. And the fact is that only about 20% of the voters even bother to show up anyway. Maybe if they're denied the opportunity this time, they'll show up in October. I mean, I think it's a waste of money, and I think it's a waste of time. And I think Mr. Nankervis is right, is that this is definitely like an iceberg. Not all the issues are visible. One thing Mr. Fisk wanted was for all of us to learn to work together. He referred to us as a fractured assembly when he was in my office, and a fractured group. And he wanted to see ways to try to get everybody working more effectively together. This might be a good step in the right direction, so we get to choose whoever's going to sit in the vacant chair, even if they're only there for 8 months or 10 months or whatever it is. Most of the people who are contacting me are saying that they don't want a special election. They don't want to cancel the trip or try to figure out the absentee voting. They don't feel like there's time to learn about people. Most campaigns start long before the filing deadline. I don't know about you, Maria. I certainly talked to people before I filed. So, last-ditch effort out there.
Ms. Green?
Well, I started out being opposed to a special election and heard from quite a number of people. And I would say, like Jesse, it was pretty close to 50-50, like many issues in the community. I'm now coming down on the side of a special election based on the comments that I've heard from the public talking to me about a special election.
Okay. Is there anyone else who wants to add anything? Okay. The motion before us is to have a special election on March 15th, and to organize the timelines accordingly. Is there objection? There is objection. Could you call the roll, Madam Clerk?
Ms. Crane?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Ms. Gladyszewski?
Yes.
Mr. Keel?
yes.
Mr. Nankervis?
No.
Ms. Troll?
Yes.
Ms. White?
No.
Mayor Becker?
No.
Motion carries.
Okay. That issue is over, so we'll start the work on that. And now we are going to the issue of filling District 1 and advertising for it. And so I think the question was whether or not we just wanted to come up with names or to go with this advertising for applications and dates. Yes.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I don't have dates or a timeline or anything, but I would like to discuss. I would like to take applications and have people submit their names just sort of like they would do in a when they run for office. And I would also promote that we ask them the same questions, written questions, that we got asked when we filed for office, something along those lines, the kinds of questions that we filed when we put our stuff on the website, or the kinds of questions we got from the chamber, the questions that we got from the newspaper. I'm not saying ask all of them. I'm just saying I think we should ask them to submit answers to some limited number of questions similar to what those of us who ran had to answer.
So my question, I guess, is there is a letter of interest that was going to be put in the paper that is in our packet under new business. So is that an acceptable advertisement? When you're talking about other things, did you...
I would want addition. This is basically their name and where they live and that sort of thing. I would like to ask them to submit answers to the questions we answered for the city clerk and the questions that the newspaper asked us. The last round of candidates submitted for those questions.
Yes, Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I think the letter's just fine. I'm fine with what it says on there. I just don't, with the action we just took, I'm not sure that it is necessary to do it. Somebody can speak better about timelines than me, maybe, but I think we're going to be looking at probably February before we sit anybody in that seat, which would mean one meeting, or March. And I don't know. Why jump through all those hoops if we're going to do it for one meeting, or maybe two meetings? I'd like to hear what everybody else thinks about that, but I think with having a special election in at mid-March that we're going to be looking at a month, maybe a month, which is one meeting every 3 weeks. I just don't know that it justifies jumping through all those hoops for one or maybe two meetings. But I'd like to hear what everybody else
thinks. If I could just mention that there is a space left in yellow in our advertisement letter where we can fill in that date as to when we want the resume and the letter back. We don't have to wait until February.
Madam Mayor, I think we could put it, say, by Saturday if we wanted to. We can put anything we want in there. I just for discussion purposes, I wanted to get out there that I think nothing ever happens as fast as we would like it to.
Yeah.
And my just first reaction is it's probably going to be about February before we have something done.
That we can do. Mr. Jones.
I was just looking at the calendar. Our assembly meeting on January 11th, so if we had the applications in by the 7th of January, we could actually probably make the appointment on the 11th. We would have somebody here. So I think that would work. That would give them another meeting in January all the way through February and into early April, given the time frame to hold the election, certify the election, do all the absentee ballots and all of that. The person sitting in the seat would be there through April, so or first part of April. That'd be almost 3 months.
We're not having an election for this special seat. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. I was saying to Mr. Nankervis's question, Madam right. Mayor, that this person would be in the seat if we could appoint that person on January 11th. They would be in that seat for almost 3 months, not three meetings.
Okay. Yeah, I think you could.
Ms. Troll?
Yeah, I'm in favor of trying to move up the appointment process as soon as we can. I think the timeline that Mr. Jones lays out, it seems reasonable to me. In regards to Ms. Gladyszewski's wanting a whole bunch of questions being asked, I'm a little concerned that that might be a little offsetting, off, you know, might discourage people from putting their name in if they have to really research out a whole bunch of issues and write comprehensive responses. I do think we need more information than just, you know, your name and district that you live in. So I would hope that if we ask for a letter of interest, that it would include asking them as to their reasons for seeking this appointment and the experience that they would bring to the office. And I think we'll probably interview some of the applicants and we can have the discussion about issues in that context. So that's my preference at this point.
Ms. Gladyszewski?
A couple things I'd say about the timeline. 2 weeks is January 4th, so January 5th seems we could get applications in by. And regarding Ms. Troll's point, when we have applicants to the Planning Commission, the Airport Board, the Hospital Board, we ask them to answer questions. And this is a big position. If people can't take the time to answer a few questions, perhaps they don't have enough time to serve on the Assembly. So it doesn't have to be every question we've ever answered, but I think they should do at least the same amount we ask a planning commissioner to answer. So,
Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Regarding the questions that speaking to Ms. Gladyszewski's comments, the difference is we're asking boards and commissions questions. We're not asking them their position on politics, which is what we would be rating them on, I think, as we are looking at applicants for a vacant seat, because we are politicians and that's the way we'd be looking at filling these seats. So I appreciate where she's trying to go with that, trying to ask them some questions, but I'm not sure that is appropriate for this, since it's not a board or a commission, and how do they interact with the Assembly? They are the Assembly. So I think what we need to look at is whether they can attend meetings and whether they can listen to the information that's presented and make decisions based on the information, and that they've got the time to devote to it. And maybe I'm saying that kind of wrong, but I'm not sure I want to get too far afield in the question stuff, because what I might think is the right answer, Ms. Gladyszewski might think is the wrong answer. So.
Madam Mayor.
Yes, Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I need a piece of clarification from the city attorney on one timeline element, and it's possible I just scribbled my notes on Mr. Jones's motion on the special election incorrectly, but I think I remember something about an ordinance so that whomever we appoint to the District 1 seat, I don't remember the exact words, but the effect was that in no circumstances do we shorten your term to which the voters elected you. And I need to understand whether we can make a rapid appointment and still have that be effective and do the job we want it to do so that we're not having an unintended effect here. I don't even know if that question was clear, but I'm hoping the city attorney knows what I asked.
I think I do. And it is correct that in order to provide for Mayor Becker to return to the District 1 seat, you would need to do that by an ordinance, a non-code ordinance.
And so the timing requirement?
We would have to introduce it on the 11th, and it would be heard on the
8th.
It doesn't, as long as you are notifying, the piece that is that is uncertain at this time is, Mayor Becker, just like any other person interested in seeking the mayoral seat, will have until a certain time to declare that she is running for that seat. If she chooses not to run, the ordinance would provide for her to return to her District 1 seat. If she chooses to run, she would have to resign her seat so that she can run as provided by the charter. Since you won't know...
District 1 seat?
No, for the mayoral seat. She'd have to resign her District 1 seat in order to run as mayor.
Thank you.
Because you're not going to know the answer to that question, that is why the special election can only be for the mayoral seat. The ordinance, there does need to be an ordinance that provides for the filling of the District 1 seat, that provides the term for that acting assembly member to sit in that seat will be until a successor is elected or until Ms. Becker returns to the District 1 seat. You can fill the seat with that understanding as long as the act of Ms. Becker, now Mayor Becker, returning to that seat does not happen prior to the effective date. So the ordinance needs to be introduced in January, public hearing at the next meeting on February 8th, and then it would be, assuming it's adopted, effective 30 days after that, which is before the special election, which will work.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. That last part was what I was trying to get at with my inept question. So it does not have to be adopted and effective before we temporarily fill the District 1 seat. So that makes me more comfortable with a rapid time frame to advertise and appoint that temporary District 1 person.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Keel. Are there other questions or comments? Yes,
just one, Madam Mayor. Just I would recommend we take the application sooner in that week of January so that we could talk to people at the end of the week. If we waited till the 7th, we would have no time to do that. So the 5th or something.
Do you have a date that you would like
the
to
get into? The 5th, January 5th.
January 5th. So
a little more than 2 weeks from today.
Okay. So the letter of interest and the resume would come back to the office by January 5th. Is that correct? Okay. Is there any objection to that date?
Some clarification.
Well, you go first. No, you go first.
Okay. So clarification, there was a request to also, in addition to ask for a letter of interest, expand that reasons for seeking office and experience. Do you want to include that in the letter of interest?
Yes, I do. I wasn't yet making a motion, but I guess I am now. I will. I was just talking about the date, so I would move that we ask for a letter of interest, resume, and the letter of interest include their background, the reasons for seeking office,
and relevant experience that they would bring to the office. Thank you.
Is there objection to those? Yes, I'm sorry.
Sorry, Mayor. First, I apologize. This is not an easy issue to work through all of the contingencies, and this is very unusual. So I'm kind of coming up with some of this stuff on the fly. But Mr. Keel's question, as I answered it, I think you could, under normal circumstances, you could appoint someone while the ordinance was moving through the ordinance process. There's one piece of that analysis that's bothering me, and that is the result of appointing someone so quickly while the ordinance is moving through the ordinance process will result in that person voting on the question of that term. And that does not seem appropriate to me.
Wouldn't they just excuse themselves from that vote as a conflict of interest?
That should be. That should be, and that might be the answer. But before I give you an absolute answer, I would like to take 5 minutes to look at the code.
Okay. Okay, we'll recess for 5 minutes.
Sidewalks, busy sidewalks, dressed in holiday style.
In the air there's a feeling of Christmas.
Children laughing, people passing, meeting smile after smile.
And on every street corner you hear
silver bells.
And you are tuned to KTOO, and we've been listening to the live broadcast of the CBJ meeting. They're currently on break to figure out some issues. The weather for tonight calls for rain and snow showers developing in the evening, snow accumulation to 1 inch. Tomorrow, they'll be mostly cloudy, scattered rain showers in the evening, then scattered snow showers late. The lows around 26. And Wednesday, mostly cloudy, scattered snow showers, highs around 33 and lows around 24.
Mayor.
The Assembly is back on record. Madam Attorney, would you like to give us your thoughts and report here?
Sure. So there are two ways to go about it. There was discussion earlier about holding off on the appointment of the District 1 seat, and the code does allow you to allow for a vacancy in a seat for a time period. So that is one option. The other option would be to go ahead and move forward with the ordinance. I think that my concern earlier, and the reason why I asked for a break, is just to make sure that the definition of personal interest under our conflict code was sufficiently broad enough. I think it is sufficiently broad enough to cover this fairly unusual situation. So I think that, yes, an appointed acting assembly member would need to recuse him or herself from voting on the question about setting the term of the seat. That's all I'll say. Thank you.
Are there any questions for Ms. Mead? Okay. So we have suggestion that the applications be due the 5th. Is there any objection to that first step? Okay. And then now I would like to know if you would like to review the applications and interview also in that week so the appointment could come on the 11th, or do you want to do something different? Yes, Ms. White?
While I understand everybody's hurry to get this done, I'm going to be out of town from the 6th through the 13th to take my son to the cardiology unit at Swedish. And if they end up doing heart surgery again, I could be down there a while. So, I mean, if I know this one might be a little bit more confidential, I mean, can we provide for a way for me to participate from down there?
Yes. Yes, we can have a secure line for you to call into.
Okay. Well, I might be a little distracted depending on what's going on.
Do you want to review an interview in that same week that the applications are due? And we'd have to have two special meetings that week, like 6th, 7th, 8th, somewhere there.
Two.
Sorry, Madam Mayor.
Two.
I said two.
Two. Sorry, I thought you said
two special meetings, one to look at the applications, read them, and another to interview the people who we've decided we want to interview. Unless you think we could go ahead and pick someone from reading them, but even so, we might want to interview that person. Yes, Ms. Glajewski.
Sorry, Madam Mayor. I'm confused why we'd need two. We get the applications, just like the Planning Commissioner or the other boards, and the clerk schedules interviews for them, and we meet that once. So we would meet once by my count, or okay. Why we would meet twice.
So you don't want to look at them first. You're just going to, if we get 28, you're okay to about interviewing all of them.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Ms. Crane?
I think we get the applications, we read them, and then we may need a meeting to narrow it down. If there are 5 applications, it's easy to do. You schedule a meeting. If there are 28, then we can have a meeting and narrow it down to however many is agreeable to the group, and that would take a second meeting.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of my thought, too. Yep. I agree. Okay, then we are going to get the applications. They will send them to us. We will read them, and we'll get together to review them and decide if we need to cut them down or not, and then we will interview.
And there's a motion on the floor to do this. So I didn't hear any objection.
Is there any objection to that particular method that we just talked about? Okay, then we have decided to have the applications due on the 5th, have them come to us as soon as possible, and then we will If there are a lot, we'll weed them down, have a meeting to talk about weeding them down. If there aren't many, then we will determine at that point if we're going to go ahead and ask the clerk to set up interview schedule. Okay? So we'll have to kind of wait a little bit on that. Is there anything else that you need for this process? Yes, Madam Manager.
I just want to, we may try to introduce it earlier than the 11th. If we can put it together, we may have a special assembly meeting immediately following or before the COW on the 4th, so it would be introduced, and then potentially it could be up for public hearing on January 20th, which is a finance committee meeting, so we could have a special assembly meeting then, so the ordinance piece is taken care of.
We don't have a finance committee meeting in January, not until February, February the 10th.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
But I think we got the process.
But yeah, I think so we may change it, just so you know. It may not follow exact assembly meetings. We'll try and get it back.
And we will let you know if we don't like that.
Okay.
Okay, are we all right with all of this process? Mm-hmm. All right. Then we'll consider this topic. Yes, Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. There's one thing I think that's left out there that we didn't tidy up yet, and that was what to do with an ordinance regarding a vacancy. And I think you, Madam Attorney, spoke about this. I don't think that we addressed this yet on what we do. My conversations with her privately, I'll share these with you, although I think everybody probably got some email, that we need to do something in our ordinance because it doesn't clearly specify that when somebody goes into the mayor's seat that they would revert back to their assembly seat. And
that's what we've talked about with the ordinance that we're proposing. That's part of the ordinance.
Part of the motion.
I thought that was a separate part. We were just talking about putting somebody in, not the length of, or not about what happens to the person that stepped out of it. I thought those were two separate things.
So just maybe may I clarify with Mr.
Yes,
Jones?
Please.
I thought that was part of his motion.
Okay. It was.
It was.
Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you. If I may, Madam Mayor. I guess what threw me off here is the language is specific to the District 1 seat and Mayor Becker, and I thought we were looking at trying to remedy this, heaven forbid, that this happens again, something like this. Am I mistaken?
No. My recommendation is that the Assembly take a look at the vacancy ordinance and clarify the process.
But would you say that has to be done in this process right now?
No, that can be done later.
We could just make sure we do it.
Yes.
Okay. If there is nothing else to come up on that topic, we are at staff reports. No?
Nothing.
Assembly reports. My report is just that until the time that a new mayor is elected, I will continue to keep office hours from 9 to 12 or whatever they set up for me in the afternoon, which has happened pretty regularly the last couple of weeks. So we'll go to committee reports. Mr. Keel, lands and marijuana.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The lands committee has not met since our last assembly meeting. The marijuana policy committee, however, has finished just about all of its work that I'm aware of and moved forward a number of recommendations. First and foremost, the local license ordinance, it moved to the Planning Commission and with a few changes from the draft that we had been looking at, the law department is tidying up those changes and the Planning Commission intends to have that for their Title 49 committee fairly soon. The substantive changes to that, I think, were mostly designed first and foremost to clarify the process so that someone who wants to start a marijuana business comes into the city for their conditional use permit and has only a couple of requirements beyond what anybody else would put in for any other conditional use permit in terms of information submitted to the city, and that process runs parallel with their application to the state of Alaska for a marijuana business license. And then once both of those are in hand, the local license would be an over-the-counter proposition with no additional process required, and would be useful as an enforcement tool. We also recommended adding some signs to be displayed inside marijuana retail businesses in Juneau. One of those was to warn or to notify customers in those businesses that it is illegal to consume marijuana products in public, and also to notify them of the federal restrictions on transporting marijuana on the waters of the United States or from the airport, as well as some signs very similar to those seen in bars. Pregnant women should not use, keep away from children. I'm, of course, not quoting the language. And one other, which I can't remember, but we will get those minutes out from the last Marijuana Policy Committee meeting, and everyone can read those. The second ordinance that the Marijuana Policy Committee has recommended sending directly to the Assembly, and that has to do with making marijuana concentrates if you are not a licensed business. And that would require that those concentrates only be made with water-based or food-based extraction methods. The notion there is that would help get at the problem that some places have had with butane explosions. Marijuana businesses that extract concentrates will be inspected by the fire marshal. They'll have all the fire codes and safety codes to live by. If you're not in the business, however, the proposed ordinance would restrict you to water-based or food-based methods to make concentrates. That will come directly to the Assembly for introduction, and then, of course, our consideration and the public's comment. And finally, Madam Mayor, as I discussed at a previous meeting, the Marijuana Policy Committee recommended a 3% sales tax on top of our baseline sales tax, which is exactly what we do with alcohol. That should also have an ordinance drafted. And under state law, that question has to be put to the voters. It occurs to me that we should consider I don't think tonight. Let's let everybody chew on it and give some public notice. We should consider whether to add that to the special election we just called. I'm not going to make a motion on that tonight, but maybe we should flag that at our next regular meeting, so that if the decision is to ask the voters at the special election the tax question, the clerk can get it printed on the ballots. But those are all the recommendations from the Marijuana Policy Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Keel. Ms. Crane, Finance.
Yes, at the last Finance Committee meeting, we received an update from the airport on the snow removal equipment facility project. We also heard and forwarded to the Assembly a request from the Juneau Housing First for a bridge loan. We received an update on FY16 major fund and general fund balance, and we also received an update on the property tax foreclosure process, and our next meeting is February the 10th.
Thank you, Ms. Crane. Mr. Nan Curvis, Public Works.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. At our last Public Works and Facilities Committee meeting was November 23rd. We got an update on the Gastonal Apartments demolition schedule. I think everybody got a copy of that as well, so I won't elaborate on that. We also had a DOT projects update, and I'm going to try and go through this quickly because of the time here. But It's quite a list, and I thought it was interesting enough to share with you. The 2016 DOT projects. Glacier Highway, they did lean into T Harbor, widening at $3.5 million. A traffic signal mediation in the Menhall Valley for $1 million. Egan repaving from 10th to Loop. Salmon Creek intersection work, they're going to do some things with lanes, adding and widening them, merging on and off there. That is out to bid. Glacier Highway, Auk Bay, Fritz Cove to Seaview. There's numerous different things that are going to be changing all the way from Fritz Cove out to Seaview. Sidewalk at Gastineau School to Lawson Creek Road. A culvert repair and replacement around town, they did a bunch of those. So in 2016, there was $47 million worth of projects around Juneau. 2017 or later, Auk Bay ferry modifications for the new ferries. Glacier Highway, Twin Lakes to Walmart, sidewalks on both sides. Renninger intersection, they discussed a roundabout at the Renninger intersection going up to DZ School. Industrial Boulevard, there will be a widening and improving, and that will require a CBJ match. Egan Drive Glacier Highway to Industrial realignment. Glacier Highway to Industrial Boulevard is basically what they call the Safeway intersection out to Industrial, and I didn't quite understand what they were going to do there, but something going on right there. And Menhall Loop Road, they are going to have capacity improvements from Nancy Street to Back Loop. They are discussing, but haven't finalized, three roundabouts in different places, Stephen Richards, Floyd Dryden, and Menhall Boulevard. That is looking like the summer of 2018, if funding is available. Egan and Riverside is a four-way intersection change, and that will also be with city input as well, if that happens. The Juneau Access EIS will be complete in late 2016. Egan at Yan Duke, and they are going to do something, but he couldn't elaborate because they're not sure what they're going to do at Egan and Yan Duke. Stephen Richards Memorial Drive at Riverside Drive, they could do some work with the CB match funding. The Egan and Riverside, the four-way intersection change. I got that goofed up with Stephen Richards. Excuse me. Stephen Richards was the four-way where it's the stop signs right now, Stephen Richards at Riverside. They're going to look at doing some CBJ match funding for that. The Egan and Riverside, what they were looking at, and we've had some emails from constituents about the Glacier Highway intersection now across from Safeway there, but they are looking at moving Sunset, pushing that through to the end of Riverside at Egan to make that a four-way intersection right there, and then basically shutting off that one at Glacier Highway where it comes back into Egan across from Safeway. That made sense, maybe not to anybody. If you go out there and look at it, you'll see what they're talking about. Making Sunset a four-way intersection would be much safer. Their opinion, that would be much safer than what it would be if they had it where it used to be. And there was a whole bunch of other things, but this year, 2015, they did $37 million worth of projects around town. So $37 million this year, $47 million for next year, and I did not get a total dollar total for 2017 or later on those other projects. But plenty of things happening around town in regards to DOT. Our next meeting for Public Works is January 4th at noon here in the Assembly Chambers. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Jones, Human Resources.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Human Resources Committee met prior to the Assembly meeting tonight. And first item on our agenda was the appointments to the Juneau Economic Development Council. And the Human Resources Committee would forward the names of Alec Mesteg for reappointment, Keith Comstock, and Jason Puckett for new appointments, all terms to expire November of 2018.
You have heard the report of the Human Resource on the nominations to those committee, the seats on Juneau Economic. Is there any objection to that? They are approved.
In addition, we had a presentation from the Juneau Human Rights Commission, and they have been struggling for membership. They're currently set up to have seven members. Five makes a quorum. They only have three active appointees to date. We have tried the last three HRCs to come up with somebody who was interested and have not had any applicants. And they proposed that we look at changing the Human Rights Commission from a seven-member group to a five-member group, which would make three a quorum. So the action from the Human Resources Committee was to ask staff to start that process, to look at submitting an ordinance that would repeal the Human Rights Commission and reestablish it as a five-member instead of a seven-member board. That would change the quorum. The three existing members stated that they would continue to serve and are recommending this. So that is moving forward, and we'll come back through either HRC or other committee or onto the assembly. Other issues we discussed was under the rules of the committee and the HRC, we can look at all of the various advisory boards that we have and their missions. Human Rights Commission has come forward. The Juneau Commission on Aging is looking at some possible changes that they might want to recommend to their establishment. They're having a retreat in January. And so we opted to look at all of the boards and commissions, see if any individual members thought any of those needed review, and we'll take that up as an agenda item at our next meeting. And then just to remind people that tomorrow night at 5:30, we will be meeting as the HRC as a committee of the whole to look at the vacancies on the Planning Commission, Bartlett Regional Hospital, and the Airport Board. And I was assured by our wonderful, absolutely terrific Municipal Employee of the Year that we'll at least get a bologna sandwich to tide us through. And there is a break from 6:40 until 7. Give us time to come down to Assembly Chambers. They're having a little bit of a reception before the Planning Commission that starts at 7. For the two members that are termed out after 9 years each, give us a chance to come down and have our say and stuff before we continue on with our interviews. So that's tomorrow night at 5:30.
Good. Thank you. Will you start the round of liaison reports?
Certainly. Juneau Economic Development Council, we've dealt with most of their issues. Trying to remember, I think I missed the December meeting. I don't know if Ms. Troll went to that. I'm not exactly sure when their meeting is in January. I'll find that out. The Downtown Business Association haven't met in December. They meet again later in January. The Downtown Improvement Group is meeting again in January. They're taking their break. And I think that's the liaison reports from me.
Thank you. Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The Eagle Crest Board met on December 3rd, and they wanted to let you guys know they're open for business. Everybody's loving it. Mr. Hanna was up here speaking with us before the meeting started and said he'd been up there for the first time in 3 years and said it was great, and I heard that independently as well this last weekend. They had a rail jam on Saturday at Marine Park. If you saw the pictures in the Empire, that was what all that was from. I didn't see a story associated with that, but they had their EcoCrest rail jam at Marine Park. They hauled some snow in there and did a whole bunch of stuff that would put me in traction. But they had a lot of fun doing that. And their next meeting is scheduled for January 7th. The Docks and Harbor Board met December 10th. The big news, there's three big news things, is that the Douglas Harbor dredging is going on schedule, and actually the dredging is complete already. Now they are set to haul sand back in and cover up, backfill, I would guess. I guess you'd say inside the harbor, and then they will be capping the fill that they removed from the harbor. That is on schedule. Stater Harbor is also on schedule. And in regards to Stater Harbor Phase 3, which is the next thing that they're looking at doing, I will call it the for-hire dock,
for lack of a better term, Mr. Yucatil has a better term than that, but they're going to have a public meeting in January. They haven't set the date exactly yet, but you should be able to find it pretty soon on the harbor's website for a public meeting regarding what to do and getting public input on that, on the last phase, or, well, the last phase for right now out at Stater Harbor. Also, we got an update on a current sensor installation. And what that is they've got a sensor on the AJ docks that tracks the current and gives people real-time information on the direction of the current and the strength of the current. And I want to say it's updated every 10 minutes or something like that. But it gives people that need to be aware of where the current is going and how fast it's going. Basically, the big ships coming into dock, it gives them real-time information on what they can expect when they get in the channel here. And I thought that was pretty cool. Their next meeting is set for January 28th at 5 p.m., location to be determined. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Stroll?
I have nothing to report under liaison.
Thank you. Ms. Leszewski?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The Parks and Recreation Advisory Committee met on December 1st. They had several reports from the Engineering and Public Works Department about the restrooms and concessions, about the Adair Kennedy Master Plan, about what's happening with Cope Park. They heard about the Seawalk Whale Project, Project Playground accessibility upgrades, and they talked a bit about allocation of CIP funds and how they wanted to pay more attention to that in the future, how those funds were being spent. So that was a good meeting. Their next meeting is January 5th. And then the Local Emergency Planning Committee meets at Bartlett Hospital on the second Wednesday of the month. They talked about the possible effects of a large Pacific Northwest earthquake, as we heard about that recently. So that was their big, it was just information item. And they meet next on January 13th at noon at Bartlett.
Thank you. Ms. Crane?
The biggest thing happening at the hospital at the moment is implementation of the new electronic health records system, Meditech, which is affecting everyone. And like all technology, new technology installations, some of it is going very well and some of it is problematic. They have brought in a number of people to do training. And we heard at the last meeting that we may need some more trainers to come in. But that is underway. And this new system is, you know, a new system is mandated by the federal government. So they had to get a system implemented and soon. We heard a report that the CEO has been reviewing with CBJ the shared services agreements for law and human resources and is recommending both continue but with some modifications. Those modifications haven't been detailed either to the board or to the assembly at this point. They have hired a chief behavioral health officer who will start in March. They are continuing to work with GEMA, the emergency room physicians, to resolve existing contract issues and finalize a new contract. That hopefully will be done within the next month. They also at the last meeting reviewed their records retention schedule, had a long discussion about financials, the rural demonstration project, which means as much as $2 to $4 million a year for the hospital, as you know, it was not reauthorized this year. We're still hoping that next year it will get reauthorized, but it is taking a hit on the budget at the moment. They also had a discussion of a 5-year capital improvements project list, and they're taking that back to their finance committee for some further discussion.
Thank you. Mr. Keel, liaison report.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The campus council met at the top of December and discussed at some length the actions that the University of Alaska Southeast is taking to deal with the budget cuts they've already had and the ones they see coming. The Board of Regents had directed them to prepare for various sizes of budget cut, and it won't surprise any of us that one of those was the number the governor chose in his proposal. Enrollment across the three campuses at UAS is down just about 3%, so it's I would say it's down from the recent record highs to more historic levels of enrollment. And they are stepping up their recruitment efforts, focusing especially on university scholars and performance scholarship recipients, whom they can try to keep here in state to attend the university. At the same time, they are working very hard on certain priorities in their budget, including attempting to bring in one term and one permanent fisheries position. They, as we do, and as our economic development plan does, see that as an area of growth for Juneau's economy. The school board actually has met twice since last the assembly met. They had an extensive discussion of a very detailed report on student discipline within the Juneau School District, and did a lot of looking at the numbers broken out in many ways, looking for trends in areas where they need to improve, work with principals, work with teachers, work with families, to see how they can do a better job at preventing and at handling discipline problems within the school district. There has also been a great deal of discussion with the community on the proposed calendar for next school year. They have been receiving a lot of comment. I believe, although I don't have the dates in front of me, that they are still taking comments. So I know none of you on the assembly have kids in school at the moment, but that room of still packed with people, as I'm sure it must be at this hour of the evening, everyone should know that that they can need to communicate with the school board about the proposed schedule for next year. They have been working also on preparing for their audit, and the financial statements are on their agenda for the 12th, along with a significantly pared down list of legislative priorities, which, while of course they haven't finished it yet, is very likely to include action on a sustainable state budget and fiscal plan, in addition to the importance of keeping the very, very small increase in the base student allocation passed into law 3 years ago and included in the governor's budget. They'll be working very hard to defend that, which, while it is less than inflation, is certainly better than no increase in the BSA for educating kids. So that concludes my liaison reports. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Keel. Ms. White.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The Juneau Airport had a little bit of news this week. While we had expected to get the state allocation towards fiscal year 2016 on the projects at the airport, you know, nothing is guaranteed. However, we do have the formal information, the formal commitment from the state that they will match 4 out of 5 of the federal fiscal year projects. The only project that did not qualify was the extension of the geothermal loop for the Shrek facility, because it's not necessary to have it be warm. And the Juneau Convention and Visitors Bureau had a had their annual meeting and elected a new board. And the chair is John McConaughey. Vice chair is Jen Anderson. John McConaughey is from Cycle Alaska. Vice chair Jen Anderson is from his Alaska Zip Line. Treasurer Carl Ramseth of Alaska Seaplanes. And secretary is Jill, I always say her name wrong, Ramiel from Silverbow. And, of course, the past chair is Craig Jennison from North Star Trekking. But Juneau Convention and Visitors Bureau did have their a lot of their tallies up from the summer season. Out of all of our visitors that came in on the cruise ship, 178,325 went up to the JCVB booth and asked for information. Also in the last month, the Convention and Visitors Bureau hosted a visit for the Alaska and Idaho DOT to gather and work on the 2017 Washto Conference that I was talking about, and that's the Western Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials. That'll be about 500 people, pretty much use all the B&Bs and hotel rooms in town, and should it impact us to the point of about 470,000. And for the people who like to host events, JCBB will do that their meeting planner breakfast on January 13th at Centennial Hall. And so that's kind of a save the date for people who plan those kind of events. And I've been there a few times for that. So thank you.
Yes, thank you. Are there any comments from assembly members? Or yes, Mr. Nan Curvis. And then, well, we can just go down the line. Mr. Jones, why don't you go ahead and start?
Thank you. One just occurred to me as Ms. White was talking about the WASHTO, is it transportation or something?
Mm-hmm.
I know one of the issues, and maybe other people know more, and I can talk with JEDC, but I believe sometime in January the North Pacific Halibut Commission is meeting here for a week, and I know that Mayor Fiss was interested in, you know, trying to put some things together. I know there was conversation with JCBB and with JEDC, and I just don't know where all that is in terms of our official support or what we might be doing there. I know he had met with the governor's office. Mayor had about hosting a reception at the governor's mansion. I don't know if people are following up on that, but I would like somebody to maybe follow up with JEDC and others to exactly figure out what the capital city's role in that commission coming into town might be, and maybe Ms. Troll has a better idea. And then I had sort of not wanted to comment, but I was thinking about the comments from Ms. Baumgartner tonight, and I did get the email earlier today and had gotten an earlier report that I had asked for. And part of her comment sort of makes me sort of iffy on how to present this, but is there some person or group within the city that can do sort of an independent review of what their issues are and what CDD's responses have been, other than the soon-to-be director of CDD? I'm looking for somebody to get us past the they said issues, and to have Ms. Baumgartner say that the Department of Law's response to them was they got to come to the assembly. That's their only recourse. So I'm not going to suggest that Department of Law be the middle people here, but I would like to see some kind of outside look at this issue. We had this on appeal. It went through the court system. And I know that it has not always come out the way the Baumgartners want, and the issues are still impacting them. And I'm just a little confused because I get something in writing from them and I get something in writing, and I'm not very good at putting those two things together. So I would like to ask if there's some way the city manager can come up with some plan to sort of independently look at the two responses and make some determination. And maybe it has to be a legal issue about the shalls, the mandates. I sit through a lot of planning commission meetings, you know, and they adopt these findings from what the staff have done. And a lot of those findings say, here's a condition, you shall. But if then they go to enforce those shalls and they don't enforce them as shalls, I think that's an issue. Is that, in fact, what they're doing? So I would just ask the manager to try to come up with some other look, some other way, and I don't know how better to explain it. And with that, my comments are done. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Dan Curvis?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I just wanted to go back and visit something with Chair Keel and suggest that perhaps we get on the committee the whole, we get law to come in as well, and we can work on crafting that ordinance that takes care of any assembly member that is that ends up sitting in the mayor's spot and the procedures and stuff so that it's not unclear anymore. And I think we should probably do that now while we're thinking about it now so that 10 years down the road somebody else doesn't have to struggle with this as well. But it's in Mr. Keel's ballpark. I just think that committee of the whole is the appropriate place for that. And the other thing, well, two other things, the other one I wanted to mention is that by charter we're supposed to pick, have committee assignments and stuff following the election. And we didn't do that in deference to late Mayor Fisk's, I guess, question of us if we would hold tight where we were. Well, it's been a couple of months now, and I think that it's that time that we should probably be giving the mayor our, I don't want to say preferences, but our thoughts on what committees we would like to chair for the year, because if we don't act on that pretty soon, again, the year is going to be getting away from us. But historically, that's always been done in October, and we haven't done that, and now we won't have that done probably until January. So I think that we need to get that done. And lastly, I'd like to wish everybody Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays.
Thank you. Ms. Stroll?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I want to echo the comments made by Mr. Jones in regards to the Baumgartner situation. It's a little frustrating that we have a conditional use process, and then because there are very strong words in there saying shall, and we get all, the can just seems to get kicked around because, well, we don't know what the definition is of substantial construction process, you know. So if I don't have a specific recommendation, I just want to lend my support to his suggestion that if there's some independent review or some creative way we could begin to address these problems. If we need to define the terms better, then bring them to us so that we can actually make our conditional use process work. 28 feet should be 28 feet, you know, that type of thing. On an upbeat note, I think that the entire assembly should be, all of us should be feeling fairly good and congratulated about the step we took on the tax exemption and trying to push the needle on promoting more housing and developable land. I think it was a significant milestone that we acted on tonight. And so I just want to give some recognition to some of the positive steps that we are taking. And we also received some recognition from AT&T regarding our streamlining our process for upgrading existing wireless facilities. A particular staff member, Eric Felt, was noted for his work in that process, but it was also nice to see that all that work that we did into the cell tower ordinance, you know, is having some effect. So I appreciate staff following up on that. On one of our breaks here, I want to share some good news with you. Maria Lovacek from the Glory Hole was ecstatic because they raised $40,000 tonight at the A&B Hall with the Native groups, the four groups doing their dancing. They raised $20,000, and the Rasmussen Foundation matched them dollar for dollar. So it's just a wonderful statement about how this community comes together in its moments of need. And I just thought that was outstanding. So in 2 hours' time, this community got $40,000 together for the Glory Hole. And on that note, I think that's the best note to end on and say Merry Christmas, one and all.
Thank you. Ms. Lachesky?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Just a question about the tax, possible marijuana taxes, and how we would consider getting that on the ballot. But the Assembly first has to discuss about how the Marijuana Committee made a recommendation. It was not unanimous. There are other ways to do that. So it does have to come to the Assembly for discussion. So and I don't know that it should be on the ballot in March. I'm just saying that if we have any desire to do something like that, we need to get it to the Finance Committee or the Committee of the Whole to talk about it. Do we want to do that? And if so, when would we do that? So, and both of those are still questions, because it's not at all clear that we would want to. But so I would say look at the calendar and see what we could get that. And happy solstice. The light's coming back. And Merry Christmas.
Thank you. Ms. Gray?
I have a couple of things. One, I also want to support Mr. Jones's statement. I am continually confused by this whole issue, where on the one hand we're told that the plan that was presented must be followed, then it is not followed, and I have found the responses back confusing. So I also think an independent look at this would be helpful to me, and might bring some closure from the people involved as well. And then I would like, Madam Mayor, to request that we look at a committee made up of the head of the JAC and a couple of members of the JAC board, Centennial Hall, Kurt Duncan, Centennial Hall, maybe a couple of assembly members, and take a look at the relationship between the organizations, what can potentially be done. The JAC is, as we all know, is looking at a new facility. There are lots of ways to approach that facility. Are there ways that we can cooperate with Centennial Hall? I think this is just a critical moment when we could bring people together to take a look at what's being done and how the two organizations operate. And while we're doing that, I'd like to ask that the new lease for the JAC just be put on hold while those conversations occur so that we can see where we are.
Okay. That request is a little bit
amorphous,
more far-reaching than just a simple request. Do you want this kind of committee to discuss the relationship of the Centennial Hall and JAC? Are you interested in making changes? I just need to know that enough of you want to do that before we form a committee.
Madam Mayor.
Yes.
This might help your discussion. As to the lease, we presented the JAC with two options. One was a new lease. It required some amendments from the old lease in order to comply with the law. The other was a management agreement, which would change somewhat the relationship but still have the JAC running the facility. And their board was considering that issue and has not yet gotten back to us on which direction they'd like to pursue. So the discussions that Ms. Crane is talking about seem very timely, but I wanted to be very clear that the lease right now is not moving forward because we don't have direction yet from the JAC.
Go ahead.
But I also find it interesting that this has been presented to the JAC board and that the assembly hasn't heard anything about those options. And so I do think that it is a very timely period to sit down and have some discussions, which I think can be far-ranging. I'm not sure. I don't have a specific goal in mind, let me say up front, for these discussions, but I think they could be beneficial to both agencies to really sit down and have some discussion.
Ms. Kleczewski?
And just to be clear with the nomenclature here, there's the Arts Council and there's the JAC as a facility, and I believe you used one time you referred to JAC as the facility and...
Well, the Arts Council manages the JAC.
I know. I understand that. But I believe you were many times you were talking about the Arts Council and not the JAC facility. So that's why I think...
Well, the council is in charge of the facility. I mean, they run the organization. So I just would like someone from their board to be involved in the discussions.
So, yes. The manager.
Just to be clear, you're talking about the Arts Council getting together with Centennial Hall to talk about JAC as a facility,
And we're talking about how the Jack and Centennial Hall might better cooperate. Are there different management options available to one or the other or both? In viewing what the Jack is going to be looking at for the building of a new theater, is there a way that perhaps cooperation between the two organizations might change what the Jack is looking at for a new theater? So I just think that there are a number of areas there where it's very timely to sit the right people down and have some conversation.
Madam Manager.
Yes, the Jack is planning on providing a presentation to the Committee of the Whole on January 4th, and I'm wondering if this can be part of that discussion with them at that time, because they will be bringing forward what they're planning on doing, what their needs assessment has been for the WAC, and how they plan on moving forward.
So, well, I'm not certain they still want to have that meeting on the 4th. I would check on that and see. I think it was my understanding that they'd like to have some conversation before they come forward, but I may be misunderstanding that.
I'm going to ask again, are there five people who want us to develop this committee? I'll count them off. How many yeses are there?
Yes.
For a committee? One, two, three. How many no, are you?
Jesse?
Yes.
Okay, four. How many do not, Ms. Litt, how many do not think we should do have a committee to discuss this? One?
I don't care either way. I mean, it sounds like there's some stuff going on that you guys are working on, and so I don't really want to, I don't know that we need to be stepping in the middle quite yet, but, I mean, it's not that I don't care about the arts. Totally came out wrong. Please don't print that. Please do not print that.
Ms. Lachesky.
Just again, we're talking about the Arts Council, not the Jack building. The Arts Council is an entity, and the building is the building. So we're talking about the Arts Council. I'm trying to understand the scope of this review or this these discussions, that the Arts Council and the and Centennial Hall should discuss ways that they can operate those facilities possibly differently. Is that?
That's one. That would be one issue.
Okay.
Mr. Jones.
I appreciate Sklashevsky's nomenclature issue, but, I mean, the Arts Council, Perseverance, was jointly planning something. Perseverance is now dropped out. I believe we're coming up on 2.5-3 years since this assembly said we will hold that land between the buildings that's now parking available to them, but they had to come up with money within 5 years. And I don't know when that particular agreement 5 years is up, but I think that's part of the discussion that needs to take place. There's the whole issue of how JCVB operates within or in conjunction with Centennial Hall that might change if something happened with the Jack. I think there's lots of issues potentially out there that we need to look at. And we had a discussion on sunset, and do we review these things? Well, we're coming close to a sunset date on whether or not we as the assembly are going to hang on to that land as available to them to build this new theater. And it's probably a ripe time for us to have some kind of discussion with those two groups. And since we own both the Jack and Centennial Hall, and one of them's run by a city department, one's run by a nonprofit organization, I think we should have a say somewhere.
Okay. Ms. Joel?
The reason that I think it's worthwhile to begin this discussion isn't so much that I'm concerned about all these problems emerging that we aren't addressing. It's more the fact that I think there's some creative synergies that could come about, because we have a lot of wonderful events that occur in both facilities. There might be ways of facilitating further growth of those activities, and I think, you know, we have our public works director is a creative, out of the box type of thinker, and that is also the reason why I think I'm supportive of this. So it's not just leery of problems, but the fact that there's some potential opportunities out there that we may not be completely aware of yet.
I would guess that there are enough people there that I will discuss. I'll discuss this a little bit more with the manager and talk. I personally have concerns, because I don't want to see the JAC take over the management or the decision-making power of the Centennial Hall. We've got hotel taxes involved. We have JCVB involved with having a relationship with Centennial Hall. It kind of concerns me that I don't want that part to be a topic, and I believe that is one of the topics. So I'm a little concerned about it, but we will discuss it and see about a committee, and you know, talk it over with the manager, and perhaps some of you who are interested in doing it could send some questions or some things you would like to have answered in this discussion, in this group. What kinds of things would you think should be the topics, so we could know how far...
I don't want to presuppose an outcome here. I think there are opportunities, and the people involved with both organizations may bring up ideas that we haven't even thought about. So,
I would guess that there's already been a lot of thought about it, because you have a lot of information, so I think there's already been a lot of thought. We'll discuss it. Okay, then we have a continuation of public comment. Is there anyone in the public who would like to address?
Jesse,
that's what Mr. Mayor used to do to me, right?
It sounded like saying stuff was going to open a big can of worms there. Okay, I'm going to put it all out on the table. Mr. Steedle, as you know, I feel that you've taken over a department that is really dysfunctional, a department that has a history of creating a lot of roadblocks and dropping a lot of balls on the way, like what happened with the Baumgartners. And, just want to remind you that, you know, public needs a process that's predictable, and if it fits code, let them do it. And I wish you all the luck in the world. I really do, because it's a can of worms. So I'm just putting it out there. I wish you all the luck in the world with it.
Thank you. I appreciate being able to take on this challenge, and I look forward to meeting with you one-on-one.
Are you sure you want to do that?
I am positive.
I am opinionated. That's really all I am.
What? Thank you, Ms. White. Did I call on Mr. Keel to add to this? Did you?
Not yet.
You can't see him. So
Mr. Keel, do you have any comments?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I appreciate Mr. Nankervis and Ms. Gladyszewski's requests for items at the Committee of the Whole. I will be on the phone with staff and with you tomorrow to find out what we already have on the January 4th Committee of the Whole agenda, and whether we can add those things or whether we need to hit them on February the 1st. The only other comments I had were just to note that I was able to attend, along with Mr. Jones. I can't remember if I saw Mr. Nankervis there, the Marine Highway System meeting that DOT held in the Assembly Chambers there. And I wanted to thank the department for that meeting. I can't say I liked everything I heard, but I very much appreciated the approach with the public and making themselves available and making information available. And so I think there's a lot of work to be done there, a lot of advocacy that Southeast communities need to do, lest we lose important economic infrastructure and infrastructure that supports our schools and our culture as well. And then also to note that along with Mr. Jones and Ms. Crane, on the 13th, I was able to attend a group organizing, one of a couple, I think, organizing to help figure out what we can do in Juneau to help deal with the increased problems of heroin abuse in our community. And won't surprise anybody to learn that there wasn't a polished set of proposals at the first meeting, but it's a passionate group of Juneau citizens who care very much about a major problem, and I look forward to working more with them to see what we can do. So with that, thank you all again for the honor of sitting directly to the mayor's left at future meetings. I look forward to talking with the phone on you all, talking on the phone with you all tomorrow night. And I want to both congratulate Mr. Steedle and Ms. Cosgrove on their new appointments. I look forward to working with both of you in your new roles. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Keel. Is there anyone in the public who would like to address?
We just get our work done.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, Assembly members, and Ms. Kiefer, Mr. Steedle, Ms. Mead, Ms. Sika. I just wanted to thank all of you for allowing me the privilege. And I do mean that for the 9 years I spent on the Planning Commission. All of you got many things to do. If you come tomorrow night, that would be nice. But I know where I'd rather be tomorrow night. But tomorrow night's my last meeting. But anyways, I just wanted to thank everybody. It's been a real joy to represent the borough the best way that I could. And I hope all goes well. So you all have a Merry Christmas. Thank you.
And our thank you to you. Thanks to you.
And I know where you're left.
Thank you, Mr.
Oh, you ate it all? Oh, come here. Come here. Are you going to get me in trouble?
Is there anyone else who would like to testify to the assembly? Is there anything else to come before this meeting? We are adjourned. We're at